Ballots arrived in Oregon mailboxes over the weekend. Just about everybody has one by now, and voting has certainly begun already. There's a healthy list of ballot measures again on the Oregon side, including ballot measure 91. That is the one that would legalize marijuana for personal use in Oregon, following the examples of Washington and Colorado. No big surprise, measure 91 is drawing lots of attention and lots of money on both sides. We heard the argument in favor more than a week ago. Today we get the argument against Measure 91. Our guest is Mandy Puckett, who is the director of No on 91. Couldn't make a clearer statement than that. Mandy Puckett, thanks for joining us today in The Exchange.
Thank you.
The major argument that I read from the many materials you submitted, including 8 of the 12 arguments against in the voters' pamphlet statewide, appears to be the substance itself in any form. Is it safe to say that no matter the amount allowed for possession, you'd be opposed to the measure?
You know, we're actually looking specifically at Measure 91 and why we oppose Measure 91. I mean, we are open to, if there's an idea that's a better way, then let's look at that. But really, we're looking at Measure 91 and actually the credentials of that measure. And there's multiple problems with the measure. And that's what we're trying to educate Oregonians about.
All right. So let's talk about some of the problems. What's the foremost one, then, as you see it?
You know, marijuana edibles is likely the biggest concern of Measure 91 and the access to use. With these marijuana edibles, which we've learned from our colleagues in Colorado, most Oregonians don't know. We're out there talking to people all over Oregon, and the repeated message that we get from Oregonians is they had no idea. And there's a problem with that. There's a problem with why isn't the yes on 91 side sharing the mass merchandising and commercialization that will come with this measure, which Measure 91 opens up for Oregon for to be the next big industry for marijuana to come in and sell these products to communities, and particularly we'll get in the hands of youth.
I noticed that in Colorado, for certain, they're talking now, as of yesterday, in fact, about let's pass some additional legislation to address the edibles directly. Is it that the edibles are allowed specifically by the Oregon law or simply not mentioned, therefore they are possible by it?
Well, there's nothing in the measure to prohibit it, and Coloradans overwhelmingly, you'll see that their polls have dropped for legalization support of marijuana. And so one of their key factors, and parents are saying, we had no idea that this came along with the measure. We thought our schools would be out of debt and we'd get all, you know, we'd get all this money and that it would be regulated and controlled. And what they're learning is that it's not. And this is an industry that can't be controlled, and Oregonians need to know that.
So, what if Measure 91 were to pass, then? Would you then mount a campaign to get the edibles themselves addressed directly by legislation?
I mean, there would be a number of things that have to be attended to because there's multiple holes in the law. So marijuana edibles would definitely be one that would be a concern. District Attorney Eric Nisley from Wasco County did a paper, which I have, that points out a number of hidden nuggets that people don't realize are missing from the measure, such as if you bring in marijuana into a jail, prison, or youth correctional facility, all substances are felonies. But for some reason with this law, they changed it to a violation. You know, these are a lot of things that are deep in the law that people who aren't lawyers don't understand, but those things really do exist in here. There's also all this understanding that OLCC will magically be able to create all these rules, and people don't stop and think that OLCC actually, their expertise is alcohol, not marijuana. And so we're talking about how much overhead costs is going to have to go into this, how much are they going to have to learn and be up to speed, who's going to be on that committee that's actually going to make those decisions. And if you look at the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, you will see that deep into that law, to be on their advisory committee, you actually have to be an advocate of marijuana to participate in their advisory committee. So those are some things worth looking at when looking at most Oregonians don't want to pass a law and then find out what's in it later.
I can see where that would not be something most people would want. Let's talk about some of the things you talked about here individually, though. You mentioned something about marijuana in prisons. It's a violation instead of a felony. Is that specifically written into the law, or is it simply that possession of marijuana, period? Well, that wouldn't be a violation at all, would it, for the folks outside the prison walls? So explain that part a little more, if you would.
Right. We're talking about bringing it in, and it actually, I'm looking in the document here by Eric Nisley, it's actually a change, a little stipulation change in the law. It says right here, number one of his article, makes using marijuana into a prison a violation. Alcohol, tobacco, and prescription meds are still a felony, but marijuana will be a violation. That's zero deterrent to smugglers. That alone is reason enough to vote no. I mean, what we always look at is the intention. What are some of the intentions in the law? What are some of the changes in the law? There's a number of things that Oregonians need to see that are... you raise an eyebrow saying, well, what's the intention and the agenda behind that? And really overwhelmingly, this law is about normalizing marijuana. It's about making it okay. You know, another example is a licensee who sells marijuana to a 16-year-old who looks 21 commits a misdemeanor. If a minor uses fake ID to buy marijuana, the person selling it commits no crime. If a reasonable person would have known the ID was altered or did not accurately describe the person. So in other words, the ID has to be really, really bad. I mean, why have these things in the law? Why are we making so many exceptions for marijuana use? You know, another thing to think about is marijuana is illegal under this law for anyone under 21. Yet if someone deals marijuana to someone who is between like 18 and 20, there's a little loophole there, the crime is significantly lower. So it's like a violation. So why? Why are all these little nuggets catering to marijuana? So again, you need to almost be a lawyer to understand some of these things, but these are all things to think about with this measure. And the biggest thing is, why isn't the Yes Side talking about the mass commercialization that will come with this measure, the edibles that Colorado is seeing? They have hundreds of products now that are marijuana products, and it's obviously problematic because our public health officials in Colorado are actually saying we have a problem here, and news that came out yesterday said they wanted to move to ban those products. You know, why is that? Why is it the governor in Colorado is saying this was a reckless mistake? Why did the Colorado governor say that? Because they live there, and they know what's happening in their communities.
Mandy Puckett, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the director of No on 91. Ballot measure 91 is the measure that would legalize marijuana for personal use in the state of Oregon. And you're hearing some of her issues with the ballot measure, some of her group's issues with the ballot measure. Join us on the Exchange with your questions or comments at 800-838-3760. That's 800-838-3760. Or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Let's go back to the edibles, because I noticed that all the attention on the edibles, particularly in the ballot measure arguments in opposition, focus on Colorado. I don't hear the same issue with edibles in the state of Washington. Do you?
As far as the concerns with edibles?
Yeah.
Our committee has actually seen some edibles that are quite concerning kid-appealing products, but there's a huge difference between Washington and Colorado's law. In Washington, you can only buy in a store. They have more control in Washington than Colorado. Colorado also has a lot more data coming out of that state. Oregon Measure 91 is similar to Colorado's law, meaning you can also buy it in a store, you can also grow it at home. And that is problematic in the same case as how can you even project what the tax revenue is even going to be when you allow people to grow at home. On top of that, the amount of usable green marijuana, the leafy substance, is 8 times the amount that Washington and Colorado allow. I mean, no one can even use that much marijuana. That's over 400 joints, just in 8 ounces, that you can have at any time. So when you have that excess of supply, where does it go? Well, it goes to places like being sold. It gets in kids' hands. I mean, when we're offering the amount of marijuana that really no real person can consume, and that's every 21-year-old, by the way, in Oregon as well, these are the things that cause us great concern. And most Oregonians don't know how much marijuana that really is. But when we look at really regulation and taxation, it's not realistic. It's not working well in Colorado. The latest stats that we got was that Colorado's projected income, they've only brought in 43% of what was projected. You know, there's news reports coming out that the schools are saying, hey, we thought that this was going to happen. Where's the funding for us? So, you know, a lot of Coloradans are realizing the unintended consequences behind Amendment 64 there, and they're seeing the damage that's caused. I mean, if you look at August 2014 HIDA report, the Rocky Mountain HIDA report that was done, you will see that over the past 5 years, what increased access just through medical marijuana has done in that state. They've seen increased ER visits. They've seen increased traffic fatalities for drivers that tested high for marijuana. And what's funny, I mean, not funny, but interesting, is that auto fatalities have actually gone down there, but marijuana-related traffic fatalities have gone up 100%. You know, these are some of the things that people need to be aware of. Their poison control center calls have increased significantly in that state from children, young children, that have accidentally ingested marijuana. You know, you can't tell the difference between a chocolate blue Kudo bar and a regular chocolate bar. And so these are all the unintended consequences that we just ask Oregonians to think about. Even if people are undecided, they can look at what's happening in Washington and Colorado and just wait and watch. Just wait and watch. We don't have to rush into this.
Is that number right, the 100% increase in fatalities, traffic fatalities caused by marijuana? Is that what you said?
I'm sorry, can you?
Okay, deaths from marijuana-related accidents increased 100% in 5 years in Colorado, is what you're quoting here, right?
2007 to 2012. If you look at the August 2014 HIDTA report, you will see that marijuana-related traffic fatalities, where the drivers tested positive for marijuana, increased 100%. Even though auto traffic fatalities, the number went down, the number of marijuana-related traffic fatalities went up.
But this is before marijuana was legal in Colorado, if you're talking about 07 to 12, right?
That's when increased access to marijuana has already expanded through their medical marijuana program. But you can look at those numbers to see how greatly that's happened. One thing to realize is that data is always 1 to 2 years behind. So when people jump on this bandwagon of this is happening and this is happening, that data is too premature. Government data is always 1 to 2 years behind. But that report is the most current report that we have that shows an overall impact to health and public safety. And there is some anecdotal data in there from a survey that was done of school resource officers since January 1. They interviewed 100 school resource officers there to ask about the impact of marijuana legalization. And what they reported in there was very interesting of the shift that they've seen in their schools. We recently had a mom, we flew in from Colorado to our mom's event on Friday in Portland, and she shared that they're now seeing marijuana in their elementary schools. She also shared that arrests for marijuana have doubled in their middle schools in her community. So those are things that we need to just stop and wait and learn as to what's going on there, because it's just too premature to make a decision right now.
Mandy Puckett, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is the director of the No on 91 campaign. Ballot Measure 91 would legalize marijuana for personal use in the state of Oregon if it were to pass in the November 4th election. Ballots are out now. You can join us on the Exchange now at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Ryan and Eugene. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, good morning. Good morning, Jeffrey. You know, it's always interesting to me when I hear an argument against something that picks at nitpicking issues, because the real issue of legalization is to decrease the prison population and the gateway to the prison community and the black market and all of the rest, and, you know, the idea of taxation and other things. The veracity of the statistics are just ridiculously awful. But anyway, I'd really like to address the issue of the reason for legalization, at least as I understand it, not for use, is to reduce the load on the prison system.
All right, so change what's going on with the police and the courts. So let's pick it up there. Thanks for that, Ryan. Appreciate it. Mandy, what about that? What about the argument that police and courts could turn their attention to more serious crime?
You know, that argument is, I know, definitely shared by the Yes on 91 campaign, and it's actually a false argument. The majority of people that are actually in Oregon prisons, so when we pulled the data in the summer of 2014, so we're talking about July, there was approximately 14,600 people in prison, in Oregon prisons. Less than 100, or about 100 of them, were marijuana-related. And when you peel back the layers, which we did, we looked significantly into what are those people there for. The highest number were dealing marijuana to kids. That's not going to change under Measure 91. So when people talk about all the freed up prison space that's going to happen from people who are using marijuana, it's just simply not true. And actually, no one has to believe our campaign. They can go to politifact.com and actually look at the data themselves. It's a fact-finding agency that interviewed the Oregon State Police and asked about the data. And the Yes on 91 campaign misused that data. They said 12,808 people were arrested for marijuana-related crimes in Oregon, but that's not even true. Approximately 2,754 people were arrested. The rest were citations. Many of those, you can have less than an ounce of marijuana in Oregon, and it's a violation. That's like a traffic ticket.
Right, decriminalization, Oregon, yeah. So in other words, 12,808 people, but it's a combination of arrested and ticketed is probably
right.
what the addition is there.
So, you know, Oregon decriminalized decades ago. And our law, actually, Oregon is one of the best states for not incarcerating people. So, you know, we really need to look at the data and the facts of what it is. I know people like to say that all these people are in prison, but that's just not true. I mean, statutorily, people can't even be sent to jail for low amounts of marijuana. So if we're talking about possessing a small amount of marijuana, people don't go to jail for that.
Let's take another call. We have Connie and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Mandy Puckett, the director of No on 91.
Hi, thank you very much. You seem to have a great deal of information, so I'd like to ask you kind of a tangential question about the situation. with here in Eugene, there's been a lot written about people having to smell marijuana and with increased medicinal use and that, and if we increase the overall use of marijuana, one of the things I'm wondering about is what is actually carried in the smoke from marijuana, and is it the active chemicals, can they be ingested by children and others that are either in the household or live near the household where there's heavy marijuana use? And I wondered if you had any information about the volatility and that sort of thing with marijuana smoke.
Secondhand smoke, good point to bring up. Thanks for that. Appreciate it.
That's a very, very good question and a very complicated one. I am not a doctor, so I want to make that disclaimer first. But I've asked that very question of doctors and experts that I have attended trainings and conferences. So basically, we have received a number, law enforcement received a number of complaints. I've even, my former job was a substance abuse prevention specialist. I've had citizens approach me and say, I can't even stand to be in my own apartment complex because I have to breathe this in. And that's another thing to really think about with Measure 91, and is that you are giving up your rights for another person's right to be able to smoke at their home, in their backyard. We have, you know, law enforcement reports, a number of reports that they're getting from people can enjoy a barbecue in their backyard without having to smell other people's smoke. Think about that if you're living in an apartment complex or a residential neighborhood where you're in close proximity with other people. These are all real concerns. I had a citizen talk to me directly about that. And you bring up, the caller brought up about, you know, secondhand smoke. There's been numerous news reports, which you can look at our Vote No on 91 Facebook page, where we have posted people who have given stories of their child being sick, you know, getting sick from having to smell the fumes of their neighbor's marijuana. So, yes, those things do happen. I've actually asked the question of doctors and said, can people test positive for THC if they're in the home with someone who's heavily using? And the answer I was given by the doctors that I asked was yes. It does not often show up in a urine test, but it will often show up in a blood test. And so, yes, those are the things that we're all concerned about, and we want to learn more. We want more research into this. And, again, another reason to slow down and let's learn from our doctors and our trusted folks in Colorado that are going to track the data to what's happening there.
Mandy Puckett, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, director of NOAA 91. A few minutes left here on the Jefferson Exchange to join this conversation at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. When we talked to the Yes on 91 side in the person of Rick Steves a few weeks ago, he said, understand, I'm not for marijuana. I'm just anti-prohibition. Can you be... So how would you characterize yourself? Are you anti-marijuana, pro-prohibition, anti-both, pro-both? I mean, trying to weed things out here. Pardon the expression, weed. Totally accidental.
I am actually for finding the best way possible to protect public health and public safety. And I think with any law, there's always room for improvement that we can look at. I think what's important, though, is looking at intention behind the law, agenda behind the law. Why is the majority of Measure 91 being funded by out-of-state dollars? What's the hidden agenda and interest there? What I'm for is if people are using drugs, that we look at a public health model where people, say, are referred to treatment. Drug courts, for example, are a really great strategy and are working well in our state and other states. Why aren't some of those things being looked at as to address this problem? Why are we looking at increasing access, opening it up even more? I mean, marijuana is the number one reason our youth are in treatment in this country. And we already have a marijuana problem in Oregon, yet we're going to open it up so that we have promoting and advertising and marketing marijuana products that are kid appealing on top of everything else, gummy bears and cotton candy and sodas and ice cream and cookies and candy. I mean, that is not, I mean, it's prevention 101, that when you increase access and you increase supply and acceptability and you lower the perception of harm, you're automatically going to increase use. How is tax revenue going to be made unless it's being promoted? If you look at the OLCC regulations, that's part of the requirement, is it's going to have to be promoted for tax revenue to come. This is going to increase our marijuana problem. It's not going to decrease it.
But when you were just talking about the number one reason that young people are in treatment is for marijuana, really for marijuana itself, not for them moving on to other drugs?
Marijuana. And you can actually, it's been sourced and cited. And a lot of people misunderstand. That's another thing that people don't understand. They think if a kid gets cited for marijuana, they automatically go to treatment. That doesn't happen. What happens is they have to have a drug and alcohol assessment first. They have to meet the medical criteria for treatment. So we're talking about kids that have met the medical criteria to need treatment. And so, again, that stat is overwhelming, and it should cause us pause to think about what are we doing for our next generation. You know, we're going to legalize a drug. We already have, I mean, alcohol and tobacco cause the most damage, and they're legal. We're talking about making a third legal drug in our state that is going to impact youth. It just is.
Would you favor a curtailment? And well, here's where things occurred to me when I was thinking about the edibles part of things. There are those little chocolates that contain booze in them at the liquor stores now, but kids don't go into liquor stores by themselves, and they can't certainly buy those things. And I doubt people give them to them for Christmas, that sort of stuff.
I didn't hear that last part. I'm sorry.
The point being that yes, there are edibles right now that also have booze in them, but those don't end up in the hands of kids.
You know, that is true that there are little chocolate that have alcohol in them. Those aren't, for one, they're a limited product. I don't agree with those products, but kids already can get access to alcohol so incredibly easily that they're not bothering with little chocolate edibles. In Colorado, those marijuana edibles are very, very popular, and they're plentiful. They have dozens of different kinds of baked goods and candies and cookies. I mean, there's a difference in marketing, and alcohol and tobacco are actually what marijuana is going to mirror and match. They're going to follow alcohol and tobacco and how they have marketed and targeted kids, quite frankly. So I'm not one that looks at comparing a drug, a drug, a drug. What we teach is a drug is a drug is a drug. And one being better or worse isn't a reason to legalize a third.
All right. No 191 campaign. The message comes through loud and clear. Mandy Puckett, the director of the campaign, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Appreciate it.